Gonna rock these shades. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution. And now, here's an indie blues double shot from our featured artist today, Brad Vickers and his Vespapolitans. And stay tuned for that interview. It comes up right after these songs.
Like a fox and wise as a mule. I give you this and you want that. You make me feel like a mouse with a cat. It's not right that you're so cruel when I'm dumb like a fox and wise as a mule. And wise as a mule. Well, I'm dumb like a fox and wise as a mule. But what I say is true. If you ever try to leave me, it's gonna be the death of you. I will never let you go. I will never let you go. We may fuss and fight every day and night, but I will never let you go.
Vickers and the Vespapolitans, and we've got Brad on the line right now. Hey, Brad, how you doing?
Good, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Now, this is your first time on the show, and we always like to give our fans an opportunity to really get to know an artist by where they came from. And you have a really rich history to talk about. So give us the story of Brad Vickers.
Well, I was born on Riverhead, Long Island, and I grew up in Riverhead until I was, I guess, 12 or 13, and my parents divorced, and my mother took us into Manhattan, Queens area, because that's where she was originally from, and I had a very big musical influence from my family, because my mother was an avid listener of jazz. She collected 45s, and my father liked, you know, country and western, and my grandfather played lap steel and drums in the 20s and 30s, playing all kinds of music, mostly country music, but he also played blues. And I got into blues by listening to my mother's jazz records and my father's country and western records, and I kind of like got fed up listening to those two genres. I wanted to find something that had a little bit of both in it. So I got into blues. My grandfather kind of introduced me to blues, because he said there used to be a music he did that he used to call truth music. And that's what they called blues in the 20s, before it became, you know, a big commercial thing.
All right. Go ahead.
As I was in Queens, I actually lived in Forest Hills, and my schoolmates in high school were Jeff Hyman and Doug Colvin, who are better known as Joe Ramone and Didi Ramone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a band together when I was like 16, 17 years old with the later Ramones. I'm later called the Ramones, but it was the early form of it.
Okay. And what were some of the other people that you've played with over the years?
Oh, let me see. I played with Pine Top Perkins, Hubert Sumlin, who was Helen Wolf's guitar player, Odetta, Sleepy LaBeef, the rockabilly person, Roscoe Gordon, and Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley as well, Lightning Hopkins. And the list goes on. I mean, there's so many people.
Okay.
I did that as a bass player. I started out as a bass player. I got into guitar. I always been into guitar, but I got really into it, I guess, when I was in my 30s, trying to learn how to play and stuff like that.
You know, one of the things that that makes, I think, you unique is that you're very an avid player in open tunings. Tell me a little bit of how that started for you.
Okay. I have to give my brother credit for that. My brother, who's younger than me, about 2 years younger than me, used to fool around with the guitar and when I, with the bass, and he came across this tuning by tuning the guitar to a chord, and it was at that point an E chord, and I learned it from him how to play it. It was easier for me to do the rhythm, like the Chuck Berry rhythms and the Jimmy Reed rhythms, only play the bass notes on the bottom on a on open tuning rather than regular tuning, because I have to, you have to stretch your pinky so far on a regular tuning on a guitar,
right,
that I couldn't make it. So that tuning helped me a lot. And when I was introduced to Bo Diddley, his music and his and talking to him, playing with him, I really got into the open tuning. He played an open E. A lot of people thought he played, the Everly Brothers thought he played an open G. But what he, they didn't realize that he put a capo on the G fret. So he was in G all the time. But
right.
he was tuned to the open E.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the new release. When you were sitting down, you know, I always like to start with the writing of the songs, because, you know, that is the center of course, any of release. And as a songwriter, what do you do to kind of allows you to tap into the muse when you sit down to write?
Well, sometimes a melody comes to me, like a little melody of a song or a hum of fooling around the guitar and a couple chords. Sometimes, a lot of times, the lyrics come first. And I write poetry, so it comes natural to me to just write something down. And, you know, it's a combination of adding and subtracting when it comes to lyrics, what you want to say. My approach has always been kind of traditional. I like emulating the sounds I heard when I was growing up. And the subject matter is very traditional. I don't get too political, though there are some political songs I did in the past. But usually it's just stories about life, you know, relationships.
Now, when you sit down and write, of course, lyrics are one aspect of it, but melody is another aspect. You know, some artists like to work off a groove. Others like that chord progression. And, you know, even others, you can find the melody within the lyrics. They kind of suggest where it should go. What is kind of your way of finding lyrics, finding melody?
Since I was a bass player and basically a rhythm guitar player, the grooves come first in my, I feel. And then I just, since I'm dealing with blues and R&B and old-time music, I just get into a groove of a certain kind of song, and a melody may come from that. I force the lyrics into a groove, or force the groove into the lyrics, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, a lot of writers have embraced the cell phone as a way to capture ideas. What are some of the other tools that you use as a writer to when you sit down to write?
Well, I still use a tape recorder.
Okay.
I have a little cassette tape recorder that can record. And if I have a musical idea and I'm afraid I'm going to forget it, I record it right away. I can use my phone, but I never think to use the phone. I just use the cassette. And then I go over a song. I pretty much sketch out the song on a cassette player.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about when is a song done. You know, a lot of writers, you know, they have they struggle with finishing a song because there's always a little tweak you can do here, a tweak you can do there. But you always got to get to that point where you can move it from the writing phase into production. What do you do to determine that?
Well, for me, it's when I can't say anything else anymore. When it's done. I mean, it's always tweaking going on throughout your songwriting. But it has to, for me, the flow has to be there. And you can tell when the music and the lyrics are coming together. And since I'm dealing with blues mostly, I mean, a blues song ends when you end it. So it's like it can go on and on, but it's easier to end it in the style of music I'm doing.
Okay.
I'm sure other genres, you know, find it a little difficult to know when the ending is going to come, but I mean, know when they want to end the song.
All right. Now, having a good song gives you something to say, but going into the studio gives you the voice in which to say it. It's where you create the sound and the identity of you as an artist. And every artist has their way of working in that environment. Tell me a little bit of how you like to, your process when you go into the studio that helps you create your sound.
Well, fortunately, I work with great producers. I have had a producer for a long time, the first six albums at least, with a person named Dave Gross, guitar player. He had his
I know
studio.
Dave. Yeah.
Yeah. And he produced a lot of my things. And what I usually do, we play live in the studio as we would do on a show. And very little overdubs. It's just live. We just rehearse it till we get it right, and then we cut it, and we tweak it later if it needs. Like if I messed up a guitar line or something, I can overdub that, or sing, you know, off pitch. They can fix it, you know, things like that.
Okay.
Very simple.
Now, tell me a little bit about the lineup on this.
The lineup on the CD?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You want the personnel?
Yeah. Who's on the CD?
Okay. Well, I have myself on guitar, and I also play bottleneck slide. And have Charles Burnham on the violin, very great Americana player. Jim Davis on the saxophone and clarinet, who's been with me for about 10 years now. Well, I've known him for 20 years, but he's been in my band for about 10 years now. I have Dave Gross on guitar. And I have Mikey Jr., I don't know if you heard of him.
I know Mikey, yeah.
He's on harmonica, and he's singing with me on a few things. I have Dave Keys on piano and organ. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, yeah. I know Dave. He's a Long Island guy.
Yeah. And V.D. King, we used his studio, and he actually helped me produce this album. He played a lot of different instruments. I mean, extra instruments like an upright bass, an accordion, percussions, play baritone sax to help round out this horn section and stuff. And Margie Peters on bass and vocals and writing songs as well. And I can't do it without her. She's a very important part of my process and projects. Bill Rankin on the drums. He's been with me for a long, long time. And a special guest, Dean Schott. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Oh, I know Dean, yeah.
And he was played on a few songs for me on guitar.
Okay.
And that's basically it on that.
All right. Now, of course, once you put a project together, you have to also put together your team. And, you know, you got to get it out. You got to create a buzz. You got to get it to radio. You have to get it, you know, to press. And you're working with Frank Rozak of Frank Rozak Promotions.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that relationship.
Well, I mean, you have to obviously get along with the radio publicist because he's the one that's going to do all the legwork for you. And Frank has done very well for us. He's been with us since 2012, I think. Yeah, we had an album out called Traveling Fool. That's when he, in 2011, I think that was, that we had that album out. And he's been with us since then. And he supplies, you know, the radio play, interviews, and interviews like what I'm doing right now. and reviews. We get our music reviewed, and he's very important in the whole process of getting the music out there. I mean, you can do it yourself, but it's much easier if you know, have someone who really knows all the other venues you can bring your music to, on the internet, on radio, magazines, stuff like that.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the industry. You've been in the business a long time. You've seen a lot of the changes that have happened over the years. And in the last 20 years, the digital revolution has dominated the industry and redefined it several times over. The consumer now has embraced streaming as a way to consume music. And the result of that is that they have shifted their perception of recorded music from being a product that they used to purchase to now being a service that's available free on their phone 24/7. They can listen to pretty much anything that's been recorded in the last 100 years at a flick of a finger. How has this shift affected you as an artist?
That doesn't bother me, what has happened now. I know it bothers a lot of my contemporaries who used to make money on the CDs for sale, you know, at gigs. It cuts down the sales, the physical sales of a CD, and you don't really need to make a CD anymore. You can just make individual songs and put them out there. But I like the process of a CD. I think people still like to get and buy them, you know, like people are now have vinyl, you know, it's like it's vinyl's coming back a little bit. I think we're in a renaissance. All the different venues to put your music out is available, and I think people should take advantage of everything.
Well, I definitely agree with you on that, you know. And it, you know, as this digital revolution, we've gone through different phases. We've gone through the time where the artists took control of their product and were able to, you know, put out their own CDs, to, you know, iTunes, you know, selling downloads, you know, now to streaming. And I've read a lot of articles about what's coming up next. And one of them is that, especially with the pandemic, you know, when a lot of things happening and people wanting to have more connection to their fans, to their and to their artists, that the next platform is going to kind of be a collection of all the things that are good about social media, like Instagram and TikTok and live streaming and YouTube and all of that, combined with a Spotify type platform that allows the fans and the artists to connect at a personal level. What do you think of that as being the next thing that we're looking at?
I think that's very promising. I mean, to get closer to the artists as a listener, I think that's great. I mean, it was very hard when I was starting out to connect with a lot of the artists and connect with people who have recordings out that are not getting, you know, national radio play, and they don't hardly get any local play, but they have product out there, and it's all great stuff. Why not have a platform like that?
Well, you know, and it also would help the artists, because this would be a way for them to say, you know, have a direct connection to their monetization funnel. Have them, you know, have a virtual merch table, you know, in their digital bubble, so mm-hmm. to speak. You know, you would, you know, just like you would go on TikTok and you would be fed things that you would possibly like. You would be fed artists that you possibly like, and you would enter their digital world. And it would have everything you would need. It would incorporate all the good things of a website, their virtual merch table, their music. All of that would be there, and you could connect with them and get to really know them as people and artists, you know?
That sounds great.
Yeah, I think that that's where we're headed.
That I think it's a good thing.
Now,
you know, this era we're in is great for the technology and the info. Getting information right away, you know, is a good, great thing.
Yep. Now, you know, during the pandemic, of course, the main income stream for any artist is out on the road. You know, I always tell young artists, you know, if you're not spending more time in the van than you are on stage, you're doing something wrong. You know, you got to get on the road, you got to tour. In the last year and a half, that was shut down. There was no mm-hmm. income stream for artists, and there was no way for them to stay, you know, and to connect to their fan base. So they kind of became very creative, and they kind of learned that utilizing live streaming and the internet and social media, they can create content that would allow them to stay connected to their fan base. What were some of the things that you were doing during the pandemic that allowed you to stay connected?
I guess for me, what happened in my case was we just started making more connections on Facebook, and we have a YouTube channel that people could go into and see all the stuff we have done and keep update on what we're doing. I didn't do much live stream. I didn't do any live stream at all, actually, or the other process. Yeah, virtual. I didn't do that.
Okay.
I just let them. Yeah, I just promoted my YouTube, my YouTubes that I have out there. I have live performances, and CD Baby makes each track into a video you can listen to, and so I just used that. I didn't. I knew, you know, we were going to get out of this soon, and, you know, I worked a little bit, not during the pandemic, but recently in March, I went to Florida on a tour, and it was quite successful, and we had a festival, the Blues Bash at the Ranch, that we did, that had a lot of great artists on there with me. And had Taz Cruz. You know Taz Cruz?
Oh, I know Taz really well, yeah.
And the Snarbuckle.
Oh, yeah, I know Dustin, yeah.
And Dave's Gabe Stillman, you know.
Yep, I just...
And Eliza Neal's, you know, it's a fun thing. Very eclectic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Which I, you know, my albums are very eclectic. I try to do... eclectic in the blues sense. I try to do little old blues, modern, and then I write songs that sound like they were out in the 50s or 60s, you know.
Okay. Now, as you know, you just said you were out on tour, and as we're getting back to live music, you know, a lot of artists are finding the challenges out there. What are some of the challenges that you're facing as you're getting back out and starting to perform again?
Obviously it's the attendance. It's not like it was. I mean, people are still apprehensive coming out. Sometimes the clubs get a little annoyed that they don't have the people to come out to hear you, but there's something we can do. I mean, you have to be patient until things get back to normal. It's rough going, you know. There's always the hard scrabble of trying to get the money, you know. Some places, now I haven't experienced it, but I know a lot of people, some people, you know, the price changes because there's not enough people come out, so you got to renegotiate, and that's not a good thing. So,
yeah.
Hopefully, you know, I always think positive. I think we're just going to get through this, and you just got to sit and wait.
Yeah, well, I hope we get through it too, and not, you know, too soon is not soon enough.
Yes, correct.
All right. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. And
thank you.
It was my pleasure. And we're going to give everyone out there an Indie Blues double shot from Brad Vickers and the Vespapolitans. And you guys are going to love this. You know what? Just turn it up loud. Open the window. Screw the neighbors. We're going to have some fun.
You're gonna knock yourself out trying to take it slow. Slow, slow, slow. Man, easy. Take it slow, slow, slow. Slow, slow, slow. Man, easy. If you meet a girl and she's your heart's desire, wreck it, man. Let your conscience be your guide. Take it slow. Slow, slow, slow. Get easy. Take it slow, slow.
two, three.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution.
Shout now, honey.